All right, well, friends, I am here with distinguished professor of English, Cameron Moore. This is Jeff Bilbro. And as we are on quarantine and lockdown and social distancing or whatever other term you want to use, we decided to join forces and have a conversation about some aspects of Dante's Divine Comedy. So how are you doing today, Cameron?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. And my students are gonna hear this in like 4 weeks from now when we actually get to Paradiso. So this is our time capsule to the future of the state of affairs is on March 18th.
Right. And judging from what's happened in the past week, maybe classes will just be totally canceled and your students will never hear this wise conversation.
We'll all be living on the moon in exile.
They'll be listening to this on their iPhone with the last few percentage points of battery. Actually, at our house on Wednesday, we lost power for a couple of hours.
Yeah,
and I thought, this really is the apocalypse.
You're there.
So I wanted to talk with you, Cameron, about one of the things that always perplexes my students, and that is when they arrive in heaven, in Paradiso, the souls are not equal. They're not evenly distributed around the divine presence. And it just sort of violates common sense that you would think, hey, we're in heaven. We should finally be equal.
Yeah.
So what aspects of that have you found your students to be perplexed by? Or what are some things that you draw upon to help your students understand why Dante might think inequality or hierarchy is actually appropriate to even a Christian heaven?
Sure. Yeah, it's a good question. And my students are always perplexed and bothered by it as well. I think it's just kind of a universal feature. So what I usually do, we won't be doing it this year, but usually I just have everybody on the whiteboard draw. If you have to draw heaven, what do you draw? And so I just separate them into groups and everybody draws. And every year, everybody draws the same basic stuff, right? In various combinations, but there's always clouds. There's almost always gates of some kind. There's always music of some kind. There are people, sometimes there are dogs, sometimes there are rivers. There's usually a throne almost always, sometimes angels, sometimes the Trinity, sometimes just God and Jesus, because we like to forget the Holy Spirit, I guess. Anyway, but the point is that everybody has a basic so imaginary of what heaven is. And some of that's biblical and some of that's cultural. And we kind of talk about that for a while as a way into Dante's kind of world just has a very different construct for heaven. And the way they think about and imagine heaven is very different. Nobody on the whiteboard draws a big rose. Whereas this for Dante and the medievals is just standard heavenly imagery is the rose. Anyway, so there's different ways of imagining it. And then I think that helps set up kind of a discussion about inequality in heaven. And really, the first thing I do, I think, that's really helpful is just to look at the very first three lines of Canto 1 of Paradiso.
Yes, I was going to turn there as well. So perfect.
Okay, perfect. You want to read them?
Sure. I use Mandelbaum. I don't use, but.
Yeah, same thing.
Okay. The glory of the one who moves all things permeates the universe and glows in one part more and in another less.
Yeah. So that right there, I think, I mean, if you want in that terza rima is the whole of the Paradiso, I think, in embryo. It's all right there, right? The glory of God who moves all things, who is spinning this whole kind of divine, the whole cosmos is moving, and we'll end with that image at the end of Canto 33, permeates, which is not just is in, but permeates is soaking through something, right? Sponges are permeated with water. He permeates the universe. So everywhere, God's glory is everywhere. It's not that some parts God's glory isn't. It's everywhere, but yet it's still measured. It's still distinguished. It glows differently based on the kind of thing that it's in. It glows more here and less there. Anyway, this kind of connection between how God's glory is everywhere and still yet measured or hierarchical, I think you mentioned that word earlier, is what the whole of kind of Dante's heaven turns around. And I think that is troublesome for us because equality is the great term for heaven. in our mind, heaven is equal. Whereas for Dante, heaven is harmonious, I think. And harmony requires difference. You can't have harmony if all the notes are the same. You have to have a root note that's more important that provides the possibility for harmonies. And that kind of harmonious iteration of it, harmonious interaction of different things is central to what Dante's doing in Paradiso.
Yeah, and it's a particularly apt in my class because we end with Barry's novella Remembering, and that opening, those opening three lines show up in that novella. He sees it inscribed over a church in San Francisco, but it's sort of the drumbeat in some ways of that book. And it's wrestling with, you know, how is it that God is present everywhere? You know, no matter where we run, on earth or in heaven or hell, we can't get out of God's presence on the one hand. And yet, God is present differently in different places. So that, you know, in Barry's case, for his character, he is more fully inhabited in Port William, right? In his home.
Right. Sure.
Or more recently. And even we have this idea, you know, like churches are more holy places, or God's presence is more fully manifest there, even if we recognize also that God is present everywhere. So we have this sense, although not always well articulated, that the divine presence is differently inhabits place. And I think that's a corollary. The other place I think it's really helpful, besides that, the opening line, is their conversation in Canto 2 about why the moon reflects the light differently. And you know, sometimes I get out, I try to draw the elaborate diagrams on the whiteboard to explain Dante's hypotheses and refutations. It's kind of fascinating. I mean, they go through the whole scientific process here.
Yeah.
One thing, you know, one thing I think is interesting too is he recognizes that he sort of intuitively recognizes the sun, the moon reflects light unevenly, and then it's as he's trying to discursively figure out why that they have this conversation. So it's an interesting example, I guess, of the distinction between intuition and discursive reasoning.
Yeah.
And Augustine says that angels recognize or know intuitively, and humans most often by discursive reasoning. And this is a good example where Beatrice gets it and then has to explain it for Dante.
Right, which is what the whole of Paradiso does, because his wills are collected. His will is corrected, right? That was Purgatorio. His intellect has to be corrected now.
Yes.
And the way that happens is mostly through long kind of conversations where she says, "No, that's dumb. Here's the reasons why."
In a public way, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's great, because at the end of Purgatory, you know, there's that famous scene where Virgil says, "I crown and mitre you, Lord, over yourself. You can pursue what you love."
Right.
That doesn't mean that Dante actually knows what he loves yet. It's still, there's that theme throughout of him being blinded by light, right? The very end of Purgatory, he sees the angel, I think it is, and he's blind for like a whole canto because his sight is so overwhelmed. And that's after he's gone all the way up Mount Purgatory. So his sight is still weak, and it has to be strengthened for him to, at the very end of Paradiso, see God.
Yeah. And I think that, I mean, in that way, the kind of, I actually haven't quite thought about it before in this way, but the whole of the Divine Comedy moves from, I mean, at the bottom of hell, it's all this beast animal imagery that is not non-rational, almost non-volitional. Satan isn't even consciously aware. He's just doing the stuff. So moving from kind of the base kind of animal passions up through the heart and the will into the intellect.
Oh, yeah.
The Inferno, Purgatorio, and Paradiso kind of map onto the tripartite distinction of the soul.
Yeah.
Right? And the That's passions, true. The will, and the intellect.
Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. What do you make of this conversation in Canto 2 about Dante? I mean, I don't know if we need to talk about Dante's hypotheses. Basically, one is, you know, it's like chopped up different ways, or he basically thinks it's different matter. And she says, no, it's one type. This is on like line 115. The sphere that follows, where so much is shown, To varied essences bestows that being to stars distinct and yet contained in it. The other spheres in ways diverse direct the diverse powers they possess so that these forces can bear fruit, attain their aims. And then she talks about it in terms of organs, right? Like, right. Like your bodily organs. And actually we know, you know, what we know about DNA, this bears this out, that every single cell in your body has the exact same DNA. And yet it's obviously expressed radically differently in your skin or your heart or your lung tissue. Where, you know, the different organs express that same information in different ways. Sort of an analogy here to this idea that it's the same stuff. All of heaven is made up of the same stuff, but it is expressed or formed. The difference is really a formal difference.
Right.
Like your bodily organs take on different forms.
Yeah. Well, I think that
it's just straight up like Paul's metaphor of the body.
Right. Yeah. And I think your that DNA point is a good one. And maybe that the way that may the kind of the shift that we have to make in our thinking, because we think from simple to complex and from the inside out, right? Whereas Dante's whole model, it's God in heaven moving the next sphere down, moving the next sphere down, moving the next sphere down. All these, line 121, the organs of the universe from stage to stage receive from above and act downward.
Right.
Right. So the whole model of kind of the whole model of the universe is top down, which is kind of exactly the opposite of an evolutionary model, which is bottom up. From really simple stuff, we get more complex stuff, and history is kind of on the upward trajectory, right? Where here, it's one, more static, but two, it's a top down sort of model.
Yeah, and also linked to that is this idea of bearing fruit, right? That because one of the key justifications for hierarchy or diversity of forms is fertility, is this idea of making life. And right. So that maps onto your distinction there between an evolutionary paradigm and Dante's cosmic paradigm, that the source of all life is God. And in fact, these kinds of formal differences that we see manifest for fertile purposes in creation find their analogy in the heart of the triune difference, that also at the heart of this creation. So that if you want creation and you want life, you have to have different forms, different organs, different bodies.
Right. That are fundamentally non-equal in the sense of they're not all exactly the same.
Yeah.
You're right. That's probably what I should have said to start with about the Trinity, right? Because this is the Trinity is a communion of persons, but I don't know that it's an equality of persons in the sense right. that there is some, the Father begets the Son, right? There's an order of kind of operations there. They're all three persons are God, but there's still a kind of order within that.
And I always think of Jeremy Begbie and his reliance upon musical metaphors here. I know you talk more than I do about music in the purgatory, but at least the basic gist is that purgatory music plays this role, well, aside from Canto 2 when it's a distraction, plays this role of sort of shaping their affections and drawing them upward. Here in Canto 6, this is Canto 6, 124. I think Beatrice is, no, this is one of the souls. I don't know who's talking. Justinian's talking, and he says, differing voices join to sound sweet music, so do the different orders in our life render sweet harmony among these spheres. And I think the harmony metaphor is helpful because we recognize that a higher note on a scale is not like better than a lower note on a scale. So it's not like inequality of value, but certainly they're different. And in harmony, it's not like you find the mean. You don't want to collapse all the differences between the notes. Actually, harmony accentuates all those differences and enables you to hear them simultaneously.
Right.
Remarkable thing that the beauty comes from difference sounded, simultaneously. So I think that's another helpful, the musical metaphor is helpful too, because it helps us imagine difference and some kinds of inequality as beautiful and not oppressive.
Right, which is hard for us to do, being right. the good Americans that we are.
Right.
Right, where equality is the great good, is to suggest that inequality, to even say inequality yeah. might be desirable in cases, sounds heretical, right? But because I think at the root of that is our supposition that difference, and I'm relying kind of on David Bentley Hart here, that there's ontologies of violence at the root right. of our basic understanding is that difference in the end is going to be dangerous. The difference just means one, whoever gets that at the site of kind of the base of reality, it's a violent struggle.
And yeah, so, I want to make some sort of an analogy here to our current situation, where when the order, social order, is kind of breaks down or put on hold, you know, some people who that's their root view of life, their response is to hoard, right? I mean, it's not just toilet paper, but also ammunition. There's a run on ammunition.
Right.
That people want to, they imagine any differences in times of turmoil will be manifest through violence. But then there's also people, I mean, just last night I listened to a great free live stream, you know, some musicians in Nashville, their concert's canceled because they can't play now.
Right.
Free live stream. And it was beautiful because there was four different musicians from four different houses, and they would kind of go around and each play a song, and they would tell stories and they would celebrate each other's music. And it was this offering of beauty and their diverse talents for the good of the quarantining community who wanted to live stream them on YouTube.
Yeah.
You know, so a whole different way of imagining our social relations, yeah. And I think a more Christian way.
Yeah. I think too, in Canto 4, in terms of this kind of question of inequality and, yeah. and or difference, is with the conversation with Picarda.
Oh yeah.
Because it's not as if, Dante's first question when he meets a soul in the moon, the sphere of the moon, the sphere of the slowest sphere, the sphere far furthest oh, kind yeah. of symbolically.
Right.
His first question is, oh,
sucks to be you.
Is it kind of stuck to be here? Yeah. Aren't you kind of bummed that you aren't closer? This is actually Canto 3, I think.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. That's his first question. So it's not as if Dante doesn't have some of the same questions when he gets up to this heaven. Dante, right. The character.
Right.
Right.
He says, aren't you envious? Right. Though you're happy here, don't you desire a higher place?
Right. Right. Don't you want to be closer?
Yeah.
And she has just some beautiful lines. The essence, like for instance, line 79, the essence of this blessed life, the essence of the life of heaven, consists in keeping to the boundaries of God's will, through which our wills become one single will. So there's hierarchy here, but there's unity at the same time. There's difference, but unity, right? We're keeping to the boundaries of God's will, which means we're in different places. We don't all get the same portion. And yet through keeping to that and what we've been given, there's a kind of unity, which takes us right back, I think, maybe to your point about St. Paul.
Yeah. Right?
A lot of parts of the body, and it's in their working together that you have a whole unity and that everybody can thrive and really flourish.
Yeah, and then she concludes that sentence with that beautiful claim, and in his will, there is our peace. Mm. Right? Peace not as some sort of like truce amongst warring individuals, but peace as like this flourishing shalom, this vibrant life.
Yeah.
A healthy body, right?
Yeah.
In his will, there's, I think sometimes, I don't think it's a great analogy because it's kind of static, but I use this sometimes too. I say, you know, imagine that the cup of her life is brimful. She is fully experiencing the presence of God. It's just that the shape of that cup or the size of that cup is smaller or different than the shape or the size later on. And yet all the souls in heaven are brimful with the presence of God.
Right.
But maybe that, you know, you might weigh it and find that, oh, well, you know, Mary, say, in the rose is going to have a bigger cup or bigger experience of God.
Yeah, and I think that yes, I think that's exactly right. And part of it's bigger, but part of it, because we're so allergic to that kind of language, partly I think we just think different.
Yeah.
It's just a different shape. we all, our souls are all shaped differently. They were not exactly the same. And so what we look like filled up is going to be a little different.
Yeah.
And that might lead us to different places in heaven. And we inherently feel that, like, well, that stinks, which is what Dante feels. But Picard says, no way. This is me kind of completed.
You know, yeah.
I'm perfectly at peace with this.
And I think another key point in Canto 3 is at the beginning when Dante starts to see these shadowy souls on the sphere of the moon, and they show up to him like figures reflected on the surface of the water, right? So he's looking behind him, he's trying to figure out what's going on, and he says, my mistake was contrary to that which led the man to love the fountain, this allusion to Narcissus, right, who of course famously looks at his own reflection in the mirrored pool of water, right, falls in love with himself and dies.
Right.
So I love that sort of allusion, classical allusion there, because I think Dante is signaling to us that where narcissistic self-love goes wrong is in imagining that is in thinking about the self, first of all, right? Like, what is it? What's in here for me? How does this shake out for me? Where am I going to end up? And what the souls in heaven exemplify to Dante is, first of all, primary concern for other souls. So they want him to look away from his reflection or his face and look at others. And that's what Picard does, right? When he asks her, don't you envy others? She's like, no, I'm fully blessed and I rejoice in their blessing and we're at peace.
Yeah. Well, that's like later on, Beatrice says to Dante, don't look only at my face, for heaven is not just in my face, or something like that.
Yeah, that's like, later. Okay. It takes a while to get to that point, but yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Good. Anything else you want to add here? I think those are the main points that maybe help students figure out, or at least recognize what Dante is doing here and why his cosmos is arranged and ordered and formally structured rather than being some sort of flat cherubs playing harps in the clouds.
Yeah. Yeah. I really think that the idea of harmony that you mentioned earlier is really helpful. That musical idea, harmony requires multiple parts. They can't be all the same. You have to have a root note. Mm. But yet that difference enables beauty.
And to take that little
that's,
if you think about the way that a symphony or another classical piece is developed, oftentimes they play one melody and then they flip it or do it a different instrument, and that draws out the beauty of the melody.
Right. Right.
Good.
But
okay. Anything else, Cam?
I don't think so.
All right, students, hopefully you understand a little better about why Dante has hierarchy and difference in heaven, and that's a good thing, and that your little American hearts, I mean, we're American too, so our little American hearts can be satisfied with difference.